And we're joined by our pal, our buddy. Maybe he's not talking to us. I don't know. From Sportsnet, Chris Johnston, who was there last night and witnessed that entire debacle firsthand. Well, that was something, eh?
Yeah, that won't make the classic highlight list of the season, I wouldn't think.
No. Let's start off with the – and this is where – we've done this for a while now, Chris. There are times where I will come across as somewhat of an apologist for the local hockey heroes, and this might be it. But Matthew Tkachuk, Marinchin at the end of the – when did that become slew footing? That's tangling up with a guy. That's not good old-fashioned slew footing.
Well, and the NHL certainly agrees with you. I mean, I guess if anything, it would maybe be a variation, but I'm with you that you know, he didn't kick his feet out, which is, you know, more the right. Traditional definition of what a slew foot is. And, you know, I kind of got his leg behind and knocked him over. And, you know, Martin Marinchin was at Leafs practice today. And I didn't really hear anyone complain about it from the Toronto side of things. And, you know, this seems like maybe a bit more of a one of those ones that got people on Twitter fired up more than the actual guys involved themselves.
That seems strange. I'm not sure that's ever happened before. Having said that, let's deal first of all with, because we have not spent a lot of time dealing with the Toronto Maple Leafs, but second time we've seen them in action against the Flames this year. Saw them, you know, in person, you know, earlier on in the year, and you know, really that was the end, I believe, of Jonas Enroth as a Leaf. Last night, it's hard not to be impressed with what's going on in Toronto. It's hard not to be impressed with the kids. It's hard not to be impressed with the special teams. I know they're still early and likely going to have a step back. That's what happens with young teams. But people in Toronto have got to be feeling like this thing's on the right track.
My sense is that the feeling is almost as though people are maybe finally almost willing to believe it's real, that the carpet won't get pulled out. I mean, it's a pretty scarred fan base, and you know, with good reason. Even you know, some of Randy Carlyle's teams had some pretty spectacular collapses, a 7 or 8 game losing streak in March a few years ago when they were comfortably in a playoff spot to fall out. And you know, Brian Burke had, at the time when he was a Leafs GM, called the 18-wheeler off the cliff season. I mean, I feel like there's still some of the lingering sentiment, even though it's totally different personnel. I think that there's far more reason to believe. You know, in my sense, and at least some of the Leaf fans I know and interact with and kind of gauging the temperature around the city, is that, you know, certainly there's excitement, but some of it is still cautionary. And, you know, my feeling is if this continues and, you know, they do manage to get in a playoff spot, that the pot's going to, you know, the top's going to blow right off it, because so many people are trying to contain their excitement, just worried that, you know, they're going to invest in another stock that crashes.
One of the, I guess the most impressive thing for me about it is, and I believe you and I've talked about this before, I think it's real easy to blurt out the R word in hockey. Oh, just rebuild. Rebuilds are everything. They're awesome. They're easy. I think the Chicago Blackhawks went through 2, maybe 3 rebuilds before it worked. I think the LA Kings went through them. I think the Oilers went through multiple. I think the Flames have flirted with it and are struggling even here in maybe year 4 of a rebuild. It's impressive to me that Toronto decided to, you know, really go down, wholeheartedly invest in it, and it's really turned out very well, very quickly, which is kind of unique in this process.
Right. And, you know, the big thing they did, I think, and it started with Brendan Shanahan, is they decided to trade Phil Kessel for whatever they could get for him. And you know, the deal itself probably won't end up being one you think makes sense, especially because Phil's gone on and done so well in Pittsburgh and helped that team win a Stanley Cup and is still producing, you know, among the very best scorers in the league. But, you know, they really committed to stripping it to the wood, which, you know, I think changed the feeling around the team in the dressing room, but also... it might not be called tanking, but allowed them not to win too many games. And you know, there's a bit of luck at play here, too. I mean, they won a draft lottery where they got a player like Austin Matthews. And, you know, there's been some other number one overall picks in the last, say, 10 years without picking on anyone that aren't at the same level. And then, you know, they got Mitch Marner with the 4th pick. And, you know, he's looking like quite a pickup at that spot. And, you know, sometimes you don't get the same value in that position. So I think that they created the circumstances where they could get lucky or where they could benefit from their position, and they've made some smart decisions. And then, you know, getting Mike Babcock for me has been kind of the linchpin of it all, because I've seen a real change in, you know, guys like Nazem Kadri, who've been here under a few different coaches and, you know, is having more success now than he ever has. And, you know, I put a lot of that on you know, obviously Nazem's ability to bear down and do certain things, but also Mike Babcock's ability to get that out of him.
Yeah, you know, that's fair. I sometimes forget that because where I was going to transition was, you know, and there's nothing wrong with it. They haven't done anything wrong or anything. But I look at Vancouver and, you know, at some point they're going to have to go through the rebuild. And my question was going to be, well, what can they take from Toronto? But it's not that simple because there won't be a caliber of coach like a Mike Babcock out there. And you know, you're the second person I've talked to in 2 days that says don't underestimate the importance and his role in all of this.
Well, and, you know, you're talking still about the youngest team in the league and they're second in power play percentage and fourth in penalty killing, which tend to be, you know, things that we assign to the coaches in terms of, you know, they could have a real direct influence on how successful those units are. And I just think that there's been a pretty big culture change around the Leafs as well that he's been at the spearhead at. And, you know, again, I think for him it was the right place at the right time, you know, where he had a young group willing to listen to that message because, you know, from all accounts in Detroit, that had grown a bit stale around a more veteran Red Wings team. And, you know, it's funny how I was reflecting on this because I was anticipating you asking me about the Flames and how, you know, right now everything feels like it's going wrong. And you start looking and you can almost blame a bit of everybody. Sometimes when things go right, it's the same type of thing where I just feel that everything with the Leafs has kind of just fallen into place pretty nicely here. And it's a good environment for these players. They're obviously young, skilled guys. And, you know, they're having a lot of success and a lot of fun right now. And, you know, it almost seems easy. I'm sure there's going to be plenty of difficult mountains still ahead when maybe they don't deliver to expectations that are going to grow with their success right now. But, you know, for the time being, I mean, it's a fun group to be around. And there's more hockey buzz in Toronto than I've seen in at least 10 years.
All right, I'll bite. He's Chris Johnston from Sportsnet, our guest down the South Street Burger guest hotline. What about the Calgary Flames? Because it seems like everything's going wrong.
It does, doesn't it? I mean, even being around the team for one day.
Yeah.
And I would have said this if we talked before the game last night. It just felt almost like a cloud was hanging over everything. And, you know, it's tough from being afar to put my finger on one thing, but, you know, goaltending appears to have, you know, cropped up as an issue again. Obviously, having your star players not producing. And, you know, it sounds like the word around Johnny Gaudreau is that he's putting a lot of pressure on himself and that things aren't going his way and it's kind of spiraling a little bit on him. And, you know, it's something that you know, I know Glenn Gullitson has addressed with him and just trying to refocus his mind to leave, I guess, any baggage from the start of this season behind and just, you know, focus really on the final 30 games or so to play as well as he needs to get the team in the playoffs. And I guess that's maybe one of the weird things for me is seeing, you know, the fact that they are still clinging to a playoff spot. I know they've had one for a long time. It doesn't feel like the sky should be falling quite to that degree, but I guess, you know, the cumulative, all those losses to Edmonton and then here, of course, the last week, falling behind in, you know, big way in games and just getting totally, you know, having your lunch handed to you, you know, that can't be a good feeling. But my goodness, if they're going to come east, you know, one of the tougher places to play, I would say, would be Montreal, and to do it on a back-to-back is going to be very difficult circumstances tonight to find their game.
There's a couple things that come out of that. One, definitely the goaltending one. You know, certainly Chad Johnson was excellent the end of November, early part of December, but, you know, that's flattened out, and which, you know, we can get to a second where they go. I would still think the Calgary Flames would be listening or looking or entertaining the possibility of even going out and getting another different goaltender. But I want to ask you about Johnny Gaudreau, and I got to be honest with you. Yeah, Komarov hit him. He watched him come in. He hit him. I mean, that's the game, and I had no problem with Mark Giordano's response. But you brought up Johnny Gaudreau, and I don't remember in his first 2 years the physicality of the game taking a toll on him like it has this year. We saw the Eric Staal slash. It seems like, you know, since the game has changed, teams are now, you know, kind of going after him and not showing that kind of respect because they know it works. Put yourself in Calgary's shoes. How do you defend that? How do you change that?
Well, I mean, it could be as simple as trying to find your version of Patrick Maroon or, I guess, to a lesser degree, Zach Cassian, the way Edmonton's kind of made a point of doing here the last couple of years, and then, you know, just getting bigger and getting some tougher players to try to defend it. But,
yeah,
you know, I'm not sure, you know, really beyond that, you know, how you do it. And, you know, obviously Johnny's never been big. It's not that he just got to, you know, his early 20s and all of a sudden he's the smallest guy. I mean, he's found ways at every level of hockey to fight through it. But, you know, I would guess for him that it's a different challenge now. I mean, he's not sneaking up on anybody. I mean, this guy's a bona fide star in the league. Even if he's playing a team like the Leafs, who he only faces twice a year, you know, no one has to name check him or anything. That they know his number. He's someone that would get heavy, you know, I think, play in the pre-scouts the other teams are playing on him. And then, you know, obviously given his size, I'm sure an aspect of that is to finish your checks on him. And, you know, it was a weird play with Komarov. I have to think, because the Flames were on a power play, even though Johnny was down in his own zone, that maybe he just didn't expect to be hit in that situation. That,
yep,
you know, he thought that Leo would maybe do a bit of a drive-by and go to the bench and change. And, you know, because it was kind of a strange play there. But, you know, it's tough. And then there's just so much. It's kind of like everything compounding on him, you know, all the way back to missing training camp, to signing a big contract and putting extra pressure on yourself, and then to not get the results that you expect or that you've become accustomed to. You know, it's a challenge, I'm sure, unlike any he's ever faced. And, you know, I think that's why it's wise to have that discussion with him, as Glenn did, to try to just get him to, you know, clear his mind a little bit and not worry so much about where he ends up in the scoring race or where he sits among the Flames, or even that he's minus 17 or whatever he is, and just focus on, you know, really being as good as he can be for the final 30 games, because you can still salvage a good year this year, even if you don't finish sixth in the scoring race again. And you know, there's still a lot for the Flames, I think, to get out of this season. But, you know, right now it's probably as difficult for Johnny as he's ever faced at, you know, really any level of hockey.
Well, the one thing I will say that I think, Chris, is that he's the type of player, because he's overcome obstacles at every level, that while this is an obstacle, he will overcome it and he will become a better player for it. Probably difficult to convince the player and the fans of that in the middle of it, but I do believe this stretch makes him better in the long run.
Well, of course, and you know it from your own life, and I'm, yep, sure the listeners are the same, that, you know, sometimes when you're going through a trying time, whatever it is, that you know, you get stronger, you know, once you overcome maybe things you're afraid of or something that you feel you can't get past, and when you do and you see it differently from the other side. And, you know, that would be one good thing. It's very difficult in pro sports to ever think really big picture, because so much of it is about the wins and losses on a daily basis and the roller coaster of emotions. But, I mean, you sign this guy to a long-term deal, and just because, you know, no matter what turns out this year with his points or where the Flames end up vis-a-vis the playoffs, I mean, you still have this player who's going to be young and is going to be a key part of your team, and you want him to, and you have reason to believe he's going to be someone who leads you in the future. So, you know, this, it could be a character building moment for him. And I think that he's right in the throes of it now, with, you know, as we mentioned, between the physical stuff and not producing it at the level he wants. And, you know, with a team losing games, it just makes it all the worse. I mean, if they were winning every night and he wasn't producing at the same level, I think it'd be a little easier. But, you know, the one thing all the great players have in common is wanting to make that difference, and he hasn't been able to do that here the last few weeks.
Chris Johnson from Sportsnet, our guest down the South Street Burger Guest Hotline. We're getting into that season, the trade deadline approaching. We had a trade today as San Jose ships Tommy Wingles to the Ottawa Senators for Buddy Robinson, Zach Stortin, and I believe a seventh-round pick. The Sharks maintain 30% of the salary. Well, not a big deal. I suppose it's impactful, obviously, to the people involved. Is this maybe a harbinger of things to come? Is this perhaps showing us that things are beginning to loosen up a bit?
Well, it's instructive. I just spoke to Pierre Dorion, the Sens GM, before you called, and he said that they've been working on this for weeks. And, you know, we're talking about a bottom six forward, you know, for the Senators, a depth piece for them. So I think that kind of just confirms what we know, that it's been a very difficult time right now to make deals. But I do get the sense, in speaking with, you know, people beyond Pierre, that there's more calls being made now. And, you know, I think that this is just a product of looking at the calendar. And
yeah,
we're January 24th, and, you know, March 1st is still a ways off and still waiting for some teams to separate themselves, either, you know, knowing if they're going to be selling players or buying players. I mean, the St. Louis Blues being a perfect example, where, you know, Doug Armstrong is quite public about the, mm-hmm, fact that he can go either way. And, you know, I think that's a bit of a public challenge to his group to see how they respond in the next 5 weeks or so to see where they should be at. But it's amazing how often that is the case for teams. And, you know, I'm still convinced we're going to see a flood of deals at some point. I don't think the tap's fully been turned on. And, you know, there's some unique circumstances here for Ottawa, you know, having got the news on Clark MacArthur that he's done for the year with his concussion issues. You know, they've really prioritized getting a little bit more depth at forward. And in San Jose's case, you know, they're one of the teams actually above the cap right now because of long-term injury relief, and they're trying to open up some space to make, you know, further moves down the road. So, you know, this made sense for these two teams, I think, because of those specific reasons at this time. But, you know, we're going to get our trades. I think we're just going to have to be patient and wait a little longer.
On the surface, I don't see this being a big difference maker, but I know Ottawa's been looking for some secondary scoring. Are they the definite winners in this?
Tough to say. I mean, yeah. I think so because they really need forwards. I mean, the Senators have, you know, they've done very well to be second in the Atlantic Division at this point, just given the MacArthur situation, the fact they've been missing Craig Anderson, their number one goalie, for 2 months now. They've really been kind of papering it together, and they weren't considered and aren't, you know, one of the deeper teams, you know, on this side of the draw. So I think in any case where they can bring in someone to help, it just gives them a little boost. But you know, it is difficult to say because I think for San Jose, it's really about finding ways to be able to make more deals. And, mm-hmm. and you know, the Sharks, they're kind of in the weeds this year. I haven't heard as much talk about them, but you know, they still have visions of finding a way to get back to the Stanley Cup final and building on what they did last year. And I think that they'll be very active still leading into the deadline. But you know, before they can do that, they have to either make sort of cash neutral trades or ones like this one where, you know, they're bringing on two AHLers and getting rid of a salary, even though they did retain 30% of it. So it does address two needs, and I do think it's a relatively minor deal other than, as you mentioned, the people moving across the continent. And, you know, it is more kind of setting the stage for what's to come. And, you know, I should mention, too, that in the Senators' eyes, they're not done at this point. And you know, I would think that especially if they, you know, keep hanging among the top teams in the Atlantic Division and they see an opportunity to make the playoffs, that they'll be aggressive and probably trying to upgrade again at forward here, maybe something a little bit more splashy as March 1st gets closer.
Good stuff as always, my friend. We will revisit on Thursday. Probably a little talk about the All-Star game that day. I don't know about you, and I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but boy, this seems like one of the quietest All-Star games I've seen in a long time. I guess no John Scott this year.
Yeah, we've got no controversy, so I guess there's less reason to talk about it. But I'll be down in California by then, so I'll be in an All-Star state of mind.
Good for you. Thanks, Chris.
All right, thank you.
Chris Johnston from Sportsnet, our NHL insider, senior hockey writer, of course, joining us down the South Street Burger guest hotline. South Street Burger proudly pairs with craft beers made in this great city. Find out more about this and their four fantastic locations at southstreetburger.com.